Hey everyone, this is your co-host for this episode of Prospects Overload, Austin Farmer. So, just a PSA, we did record this well ahead of the draft, but between travel, work, and life, this thing did take a while to get edited, and whenever you hear us talk about the draft coming up, this was recorded maybe a week or two prior to the draft, and since it took me so long to get this thing edited, we are behind, but we are happy to get this posted, and we hope y'all enjoy. Peace, everyone.
All right. Welcome back. It has been a long time, but welcome back to another installment of Prospects Overload presented by Prospects Worldwide. I, of course, am Drake Man, the lovely, talented, and amazing host of Prospects Overload. And today we bring back a classic of just me and my co-host, Austin Farmer. Austin, say hello.
What's up, everybody? You know, it's pretty cringe every time you call yourself lovely, and I'm going to ask you to stop doing that, but more importantly, this is our first Spotify episode.
Yeah, we are now on Spotify. So, yeah, and I hope you know I'm not going to stop doing that because let's just say everybody loves me. So,
not really. I think you just are in denial about yourself.
Nah, not really. But anyway, Austin, how are you doing?
I am doing pretty good, you know. Life could be worse, but life could also be better. It's about so-so, but we're here and that's what matters.
But anyway, Austin, we have a boatload of stuff to talk about. I made this a ridiculous episode filled with a lot of takes, and we already are going to have the heat factor pumped up a little bit. But we're going to talk about some college stuff for the draft, ranking some prospects. We're going to talk about Chase Davis and Ethan Salas and some more interesting stuff. Are you ready for this?
I am definitely ready.
You don't sound ready, but okay.
Okay, let me redo that. I'm definitely ready, yo. No, I'm joking.
Okay, never do that again, please. I will literally pay you never to do that again. Okay. But anyway, we're going to go to everybody's favorite topic that we always discuss, start, bench, cut. And this one, I decided to do three Mariners infield stud prospects. And Austin, I know you're very high on one of these guys, and I'm very high on one of them as well. But our start, bench, cut is Colt Emerson, Cole Young, and Thelman Celestin. So I will let you go ahead and go first.
Yeah, so this one is kind of a tricky one. As you said, I am pretty high on Cole Young, and I am working on a scouting report of him, and I know that you just did a scouting report on Thelman Celestin and all the video that you've gotten, which is about 15 minutes worth, by the way. So by the time that we have that video posted, it should be closer to about 20. So get ready to hold on to your hats, folks, because you're going to be in for a wild ride. But Colt Emerson is also another really good prospect. You didn't fail to mention that all these guys are potential shortstop prospects, by the way, not just Mariners prospects. So this is a really tricky one. Now, I know I've seen at least a few games of Emerson when he was in Modesto Low A last year, and he did look pretty good. However, I'm not as familiar with his game as I am the other two. So I'm going to cut Emerson, even though I do think his bat looks really promising and his defense is pretty solid as well. Well, not solid. His defense is pretty decent, let's say. But Cole Young, I would have to say he's going to be who I bench. I think where Celestin has the advantage over all of them is his power and just his ability to impact the ball better. I do think that Cole Young has a really good pure hit tool, and his approach does remind me of Corey Seager. Now, that's not my comp form, but I think that the hit and approach are very similar to Corey Seager. But I think that Celestin does impact the ball a little bit better, and he's only 18 years old. So I do think that there is a bit higher long-term upside for Celestin. And also the fact that Cole Young doesn't really have much of an arm at short. He's going to be more of a second baseman moving forward. He does lack a little bit of range going to his back at short. And I think that that would be the reason why I would bench him and start Celestin.
See, that's why I said infield prospects, because you can't have them all at short. As you know, they can't really have that. You know, the Padres are trying that right now, but
my bad. I tend to tune you out at times, so.
Yeah, I could tell, because your takes are terrible. But anyway, I think what I'm going to do here is, you also failed to mention with Celestin that he's a switch hitter. The other two are not.
Yes, so, that is also kind of where I was coming from with he can impact the ball more.
So on my end, I think I would start Celestin just because everybody knows how high I am on him. Like, I think I'm one of the higher guys on Celestin's hit tool. I gave it a 65, and I know a lot of people were giving it more like a 60, but I have him as a 65-50 with his hit and power. So, and also just speed, as much as I want him to be faster, you know, obviously he's not. People were kind of like questioning my speed grade, but it's true. He's just not going to be that quick going forward, especially as he starts to grow and mature. But on the other end, his defense looks solid. Arm strength is great. Felton Celestin is the one that I would, if personally somebody said you have to keep one of these three, I'm keeping Celestin all day, every day, and twice on Thursday. I'm benching Cole Emerson and I'm cutting Cole Young. Cole Young because of his lack of power. That's pretty much the only reason why. And I also know that Cole Emerson's hit tool is absolutely insane as well. So this one was difficult, probably one of the most difficult ones I've ever done.
Yeah, you know, you did mention that you have a 65 on Celestin's hit. That's what I have on Cole Young as well. But really the defining factor is what gives Celestin the edge is his raw power is far better than Cole Young's. Cole Young is probably going to be a 15 home run bat at best. He's only got, I would say, average raw power versus like Celestin's 70 raw power. So.
And the thing with Celestin is like when he hits a home run, he barely swings and the ball just goes a long way. Just like when I caught Robbie Ray at Arizona Complex League, Celestin was the only one to get to even make contact against Robbie Ray. And it was 95 in the corner. And he just flicked his wrist and hit it down the right field line. Absolutely nuts from Celestin. Anyway, I'm hearing crickets from Austin. So that means that we are moving on with our, because the draft is, how long is it? Like a month away, Austin? Less than a month away?
It is on July 14th to the 16th.
Okay, so with that, we will have our favorite position player prospects and our favorite pitching prospects that we saw live this year. Now, Austin, I know you went to a lot more college games than I did. I'll let you take the reins on your favorite position player college prospect that you saw this year.
Yeah, you know, like you said, I did see a lot of college games. Well, a lot more than you, at least. But I definitely was out, I would say, most weeks at a college ballpark. And I did see some high school games as well. I got to see Cade Arambidi, and he's actually not going to be my pick. But, you know, I do have a lot of options to choose from. However, I know I talk about him a lot. I talk about him as much as you talk about Celestin. I'm going to be a homer here, and I'm going to go with my guy, Walker Yannick. I just, like, the video that we have of him on our YouTube, it's like 15 minutes long. I finally got to see more power towards the end because it seemed like he never hit the ball out of the park at home, not until the second half of the season. But he did finally start showing some opposite field power too, which is very nice because he's predominantly a pull side guy. But, you know, just the amount that I've covered him or the amount of times I've covered him over the last 3 years, it's really been a nice development. It's been a nice, you know, it's been really nice to see his development over these last 3 years. So he's gonna be my pick, and I know it's definitely a homer pick because I also did see Braden Montgomery live, and I've seen, you know, Jared Thomas live. But Yannick, I think, just, you know,
JJ Weatherholt.
I did see JJ Weatherholt and Anthony Silva live. Yeah, good points. But, you know, when I did see JJ Weatherholt, he decided to do nothing that game after having a 3-hit game the day before. And he basically went 0 for 4 with like three really bad swings. So thanks, JJ.
Way to call out a future draft prospect. Good job, Austin.
Potential 1-1, might I add.
Exactly. Way to call him out. But yeah, no, folks, I'm surprised that like he doesn't have a poster of Walker Yannick on his wall, because it's, yeah.
Says the guy who raves about Celestin every time we talk. So, you know.
Let's be real here. I'm not the only one on Celestin, buddy. And I wasn't the first one.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one on Yannick, because he's had multiple first round projections. So
let's be fair here. You know what? Let's be fair here. If he didn't go to Sam Trustin University, he would not be talking about him.
I hate you so much.
Exactly. Thank you.
No, it's not even that. It's the fact that you continue to call it Sam Trustin when you literally go to an expletive university in GCU. I'm not going to say what that expletive is, but you know, yeah, you're one to talk.
Fine. If he didn't go to Sam Houston State, you would not actually ever talk about him.
No, that's not true, because, you know, I'm really high on Jace LaViolette, and he goes to A&M, and I don't care about A&M. And I do really like Anthony Silva, too, defense-wise, at least. So, you know, I have plenty of options to rave about, but I will say that I definitely am being a homer, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm being a homer too, because I only did go to two college games this year, because I am a high school baseball coach, so I did not have time to go because I was going to games for my own high school. But basically, I have a tie between two, and I got to see Washington, UC San Diego, ASU, and GCU. And my tie is between a couple of 2024 guys, Brandon Compton of ASU and Tyler Wilson of GCU. Now, both of them are kind of like rising prospects from this year. And Tyler Wilson is a guy that I saw last year, and all he's done is really hit every time I've seen him. And he's got some pull side power. And honestly, I don't know if he'll get taken, just because, you know, GCU doesn't face the best, you know, pitching. Brandon Compton, what?
They're mid-major, so, you know, the WAC isn't necessarily the best competition, but yeah.
The WAC is definitely WAC. Cue the crowd laughter. But anyway, Brandon Compton is a guy that I got to see a massive home run from. And I remember when he makes contact with the ball just flies off of his bat. I forgot the exit velocity that he had on his home run. I think it was something like massive, but I saw a live open side, great swing, and he is definitely someone to watch in this 2024 draft. But anyway, we're going to go to now our favorite college pitching prospect. And Austin, which Sam Houston guy do you have?
Yeah, you know, my choice shockingly isn't actually going to be a Sam Houston guy, because Sam Houston didn't really have anyone that stood out. Like, there was Colton Atkinson, who could, you know, top out at low 90s. He was mostly upper 80s, and he would be really good for a few starts and then just fall apart here and there. And then Chandler David, I did see top out at 95, 96. He throws hard and he's got a pretty good slider, but you know, no one on the team really like screamed big league potential arm. I think that it was mostly guys I think are going to get picked and have a chance to make it. But my shocking choice is actually going to be Ryan Johnson. I did get to see him face Sam Houston at Sam Houston, and the game was like literally right around 90 minutes, if not less, because Ryan Johnson was working incredibly fast. He was mowing the Sam Houston hitters down. Literally the only guy that made solid contact against him was actually Walker Yannick. And then I think Caleb Cotton had a triple that game, but Johnson struck out like 15 batters. I think that game he either walked one or didn't walk any. I don't have the box in front of me, but he was sitting mid 90s. His slider was incredible. He was mixing in a cutter in there. That guy and his antics are just really funny. Like, just the way that he goes about it on the mound is something to see. And he has been like 93, 96. He tops out at 98. But yeah, Ryan Johnson is probably going to be a back half first round guy, potentially a compensation guy. Definitely, he's definitely a day one guy in my books.
Yeah, I remember when you were writing the report, which folks, he does have a report on prospectsworldwide.com. He was like, oh, I'm struggling with a comp for this guy. And I sat there and you know, I was like, oh, what's his name? And he told me, so I put it on Twitter and I immediately texted him, do Ryan Walker of the Giants, because it's literally the same mechanics.
Yeah, and when I did see his mechanics, it's pretty much exactly the same. No, comping guys, for whatever reason, I struggle with big time. I'm more focused on, you know, what I think their grades are rather than who they look like. And so whenever it gets around to that time, I'm terrible at it.
Folks, he's also just kind of stupid.
Says the guy that barely got into Grand Canyon University, so.
Okay, buddy. Okay. All right. Whatever makes you sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you could just All right, Austin. So you just did that incredibly hurtful roast of me saying I barely got into GCU. So you're gonna hear more about GCU. My pick is right-handed pitcher Walter Quinn. And if you folks follow us on Twitter, I got to see Grand Canyon versus Washington, and there was a time in the game where Washington had the bases loaded and Grand Canyon went to Walter Quinn, who is a low velo arm, but he relies on his funky arm angle and his movement of his pitches to get out of innings. And what he did was he kind of dominated. He went, I believe, two innings, but his fastball sat at high 80s, topped out at around 90, but it had some massive sink to it. And he's a guy that going forward, I don't know, again, another guy that, because of the whack, I don't think that he will get picked, but he might be a decent, like, undrafted free agent signing for somebody, especially if he continues, because his control looked really good as well. But yeah, Walter Quinn is the guy that I'm going for with GCU. And if he gets picked, he'll probably be a later round pick, like 14th, 15th rounder. But he's a 2024 guy as well. So now going forward, we are done with draft talk for now. Maybe we'll do another one of these closer to the draft or like a draft reaction. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But now we get to make some people mad here. JK. But we're going to rank five of the prospects from worst to best. And these are all outfield prospects. All right. So the five prospects that we will be ranking are Jason Chirillo, Spencer Jones, Yankeel Fernandez, Drew Gilbert, and Drew Jones. Austin, I'll let you take this one first.
Yeah, so this one is another tricky one. I do really like Drew Gilbert, and I do like Jason Chirillo. I think Yankeel Fernandez potentially is the best out of the five, so I think I'm going to have him at one. I have seen a bit of Drew Gilbert coming up. I did see him quite a bit his draft year, and he's an all-out gamer, and I don't think he's going to hit for a super high average, but I think he is going to have some impact on the ball, and I think he's good for 25-plus home runs a season, and he should steal some bases. So I'm going to have Yankeel 1, Drew Gilbert 2. Now, I know Spencer Jones has kind of struggled with contact this year, but his power upside is pretty massive. So I think I'm going to go with Jones at 3. And I think I'm going to go with Jason Chirillo at 4. Just knowing that he's got a really, really promising hit tool, like very good bat to ball skills. I know he does lack power, but he seems to do everything else. So I'm going to have him at 4. And, you know, if you ask us this in a year, I think it easily could change, especially because Drew Jones has seemed to somewhat find himself this season. But I am going to put Drew Jones last just because there is a lot of risk with him, I feel. Now the defense is looking like, you know, he's going to be as good as his dad was, but I don't think he's going to hit for average at all. Now, the pop is really good, but because there's so much risk in that hit tool, that's why I would have Drew Jones at 5.
I mean, we're both in agreement, because I also had Drew Jones 5 on this list. But can we talk about one thing? Do you realize that Jason Chirillo is like the polar opposite of his brother, Jackson Chirillo?
Yeah, I can see that, because Jackson, while he does project a hit for a good average, even though he's struggling this year, he seems to be a really, really well-rounded overall player. Like, you know, I comped him to Mookie Betts in my report, but Jason Chirillo is really a light-hitting kind of leadoff prospect kind of bat. And yeah, that's
pretty interesting. Like, Jackson Chirillo, a lot of swing and miss in his bat. Jason Chirillo, more of a contact oriented, as you said, bat to ball skills are insane, but he just seems to have a really good eye at the plate and he walks a ton. Jackson Chirillo really doesn't walk a ton, but they're like polar opposites, which is crazy.
Yeah. And even then, I still think that we're not discrediting Jackson at all. It's just that, yeah, definitely Jason has better bat to ball skills, even though I do think that with how hard Jackson hits the ball, and he does have a decent eye, nothing great, but yeah, it's definitely not as good as Jason's. So I see where you're coming from.
And but with that being said, Jackson's power is much, much better. Like, Jason probably has 30 power maybe in this tank, because he's more like a slap hitter kind of, because that's what we're trying to get on. But yeah, no, I was just thinking about that just now. Just like, they're like polar opposites.
Yeah, you know, that's a pretty solid observation. Good job.
Thank you. I'm amazing. I know. But anyway, I will do my list now. And we are pretty similar with our lists, except I'm lower on Drew Gilbert than you. But we both have Yankeel at 1, because he's currently slashing really well in Double A, and he's only 21. But he also just has all the tools to be a star for the Rockies. And again, the Coors effect. No, we didn't even mention that.
No,
was the Coors effect with any Rockies hitting prospect? Crazy. Like, I see guys out here at Complex League, I'm just like, ooh, his bat might play really well in Coors, or his bat might not play well in Coors. But very rarely does a prospect not, his bat won't play well in Coors, if that makes sense. But I have Yankeel at 1, Spencer Jones at 2, because again, power upside, a lot of speed. Jason Chirillo at 3. I'm super high on him. I've already talked to a lot about him. Drew Gilbert 4 and Drew Jones 5. Drew Gilbert, I think, has a little too much swing and miss in his bat, but I will say the Mets getting Drew Gilbert and Ryan Clifford for Justin Verlander may be a steal and a half.
I would tend to agree for the long-term benefits, definitely.
But anyway, that was interesting, and I don't think we pissed anybody off, right? Or at least I hope we didn't.
I'm sure we did somewhere. I'm sure someone's going to be mad that, you know, Drew Jones being the son of a potential Hall of Famer, someone's going to be buying into the hype still and say, oh, you guys are so low, and, you know, Jason Chirillo doesn't have half the power that, you know, we can't please everybody, but, you know, it's just our opinions.
Yep. And wow, that's actually a really good transition, Austin. Good job.
See what I did there, huh?
Yeah, that was a good transition. This one is going to be called Honest Opinion. And we're going to talk about Chase Davis. And this one might hurt me being a Cardinals fan, but Chase Davis right now, it's Austin. I don't really know what to say about Chase Davis. I'll let you speak first on him.
Yeah, you know, I remember first noticing Chase Davis when he was a prep guy. And while I wasn't watching games, I did see a lot of video on him. And I know he's gotten a lot of comps like Carlos Gonzalez, Cargo. And I don't think he ever really projected a hit for average his first couple of seasons at Arizona. But then his junior campaign, he really showed a more refined hit tool. You know, I think that is what led him to become a first round pick versus like maybe a second round slash early day two guy. I think he was more projected to be around, you know, third or fourth round. And then he really showed a refined hit tool, and that, you know, led him to become a first round pick at 21 overall to the Cardinals, like you said. And I do think that his game really reminds me of Curtis Granderson. Now, I know that he's not doing the best in low A, which is not good considering most college guys go to high A. But you got to remember, too, a lot of prospects, their development isn't necessarily linear. So he could just be going through the humbling moments of his development in his career. And then, you know, he could come back next year and he could just end up crushing it. But right now, you know, I know he's mostly a pull hitter, I believe, is what the spray charts were showing. But I think that there's still going to be plenty left in Chase Davis's tank. I think he's just really adjusting to pro life, and it can be a tough development for some guys. And, you know, I think that right now that's what he's going through. Now, I could be wrong and he could end up becoming a bust, but I think that there's still good upside in Chase Davis, is my honest opinion.
See, I tend to agree, but the reason why I put him here instead of anybody else is he's 22 and he's struggling at low A. And I get the transition's different for everybody. Late bloomers happen, all that type of stuff. But it really is worrisome to watch somebody like older than you know, 20, 21 years old in low A, struggling the way that he is. I mean, he's been a lot better as of late, but he's still striking out at a very high clip, not walking as much. His on-base percentage took a dive. But everything about him, though, does scream Carlos Gonzalez. So I'm really hoping that he does figure it out. But something else that might also be impacting is the whole entire transition from metal to wood every day. That's something else that could also be impacting a little bit of his potential, because a lot of guys, you know, they're swinging metal bats and everything's going good with them, and then they start going to pro ball and it's like, oh, I have to use wood. Oh crap, okay, so let me get adjusted to using wood every single day.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because the new BB core bats are pretty similar. Now, I know that, you know, it's definitely not the same as wood bats, but I think they've done a good job of modifying it to where it's not super vastly different. I do think what could be happening is, while it's still leagues below big league pitching, I think the quality of competition on an everyday basis, you know, the only days that minor leaguers get off are on Mondays. I think that grind, and also the fact that the spin, now the command and stuff generally is about the same, I would say, at least from what I've seen between low A and college, it's pretty similar. But I think that the arms are definitely further along, at least in my eyes, because, you know, there are a lot of, you know, 19, 20 year old kids who are, you know, this is their full time craft. Whereas in college, you know, a lot of the kids that are 19, 20 are also still college students. So this has become more of their livelihood than, you know, them being in class. So I think that he's facing a different level of competition, and I think that's where the struggle is coming from, not necessarily the bats, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, I hear you. It's just a little observation, because I know sometimes that change of wood bat to metal, or metal bat to wood bat, it's even happening to one of my players. Whenever he uses wood, he mashes. Whenever he uses metal, he doesn't. So it's really weird. But yeah, Chase Davis, we're rooting for you. We want you to succeed, especially because you look just like Carlos Gonzalez. And being a Cardinals fan, I would love to see you hit an absolute nuke in Cardinal Stadium, because that would be absolutely crazy and fun. But anyway, let's move on here. All right, Austin. So this next one is all about just a little discussion on a teenage prospect that I feel like people are starting to turn away from, I guess, because I've seen people talk negatively about his performance this year, which is warranted in some aspect, but let's just have a small discussion about Ethan Salas. And I'll go first with this one. The people that are sitting there and were thinking that Ethan Salas was going to just, you know, completely rake through the minors and debut sometime by like next year or something, that's just absolute insanity, because the Padres, I get that they are kind of like giving him a big challenge by putting him directly in low A and all that stuff. And he's still 17, or is he 18 now?
He is 18. And thanks for calling me crazy, because we'll get into this later. But you know that for my MLB ETA on the report that I did say that he has a chance of debuting this year. So thanks for the hurtful words there, Drake.
You're welcome. Because remember, he's 18. So many guys start in Dominican Summer League or Arizona Complex League. He skipped both of those. So if you're going to sit here and say Ethan Salas shouldn't be a top prospect in all baseball, Ethan Salas is this, Ethan Salas is that, like we should be worried about Ethan Salas. No. If he was like 22 in low A, then yeah, you'd be worried about him. But he's 18 in high A right now. Like, that's just nuts. But Austin, I'll let you take over before I get too mad. So,
yeah, you know, my logic behind putting the 2024 MLB ETA, it was definitely a bold take. And I think realistically, he would have debuted in 2025 had all things gone in the right direction. Now, I'm not saying that they still aren't, but, you know, like I was saying earlier, not everyone's development is linear. Like you said, he's 18 years old. You know, he's going to go through his struggles, and he's in high A right now, not low A. But my thinking behind the 2024 ETA is, one, I knew I would get people to talk about it. It was definitely not like a clickbaity thing, but it was definitely something that I wanted people to think about, because my logic behind it was, at the time, Gary Sanchez was the catcher for the Padres, and while Luis Camposano was having a really good year this year, I don't think that it was certain that there was, you know, he would be as good as he's been, or, you know, if Sanchez had come back and or they had gotten someone else. I think that there was too much up in the air for the 2024 spot, and it definitely was a bold take, because another thing I was thinking about was, well, he's already in double A. And when you're in double A, you're basically a call away from the big leagues. You know, a lot of people still think that triple A is the best league in the minors. It's really not, honestly. It's basically where a bunch of people go that they either were a bunch of never were's or a bunch of has-beens, as some people say. It's like where it's basically a league where people who can't quite cut the big leagues go. It's basically, I think AAA is becoming less important, I think, along the way. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, which is fine. But really, once you're in AA, you're basically a call away. I wasn't sure where Salas would start in 2024. As it ends up, they sent him to high A, which was definitely the better move. But I wanted to make a bold take, and that's essentially why I put 2024. Now, he's still definitely the catcher of the future long term. Like we were talking about with Chase Davis, you know, everyone goes through struggles. And Salas, you got to remember, yeah, he's an 18-year-old kid. A lot of 18-year-old kids would be graduating high school right now. Like, he would have just graduated high school in America if he had, you know, grown up here. So the fact that he's in a high A, even with his struggles, is incredibly impressive. And look at Sebastian Walcott. Walcott has all the potential in the world too, and he's struggling too. But, you know, they're trying to speed up the development, which, not saying it's not a bad thing, not saying it's a good thing, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough on any 18-year-old kid when you're facing guys that, you know, just were in college. So I think Ethan Salas, the struggles are very valid, but I think the people that are bashing him, quote unquote, on social media for his poor performance, I think that the mindset of baseball fans need to change. I think that people are in such right now mindsets where he really took the league by storm last year in the minors, and everyone had super high expectations now, including myself. I really was impressed with how comfortable he looked at the plate, and he had, you know, he showed the bat to ball skills. He wasn't really getting over challenged by anything, and he just showed confidence. So I really thought that he would do better than what he's doing now. But that being said, I still think that he's a very Victor Martinez type player. And I think that people just need to step back and realize that every 18-year-old kid in life is going to go through struggles. And I think that Salas will still be a big time star. I don't know if he's, you know, it's, you can never tell whether a guy's going to be a Hall of Famer coming through the system. It's pretty ridiculous for people to even think that, but I think that long-term he's going to be a multi-time all-star, and then we'll see what happens after that. But I think the future is so bright for Ethan Salas, despite him taking a step back this year.
I just want to say one thing though, as of the recording of this podcast, Ethan Salas is currently on a 4-game hitting streak, and in his last 15 at bats, he has 6 hits. So he's hitting 400 his last 4 games. So maybe he's figured something out. I mean, I'm not going to say anything. I mean, possibly he could. I don't know if Fort Wayne has a game today or not. I haven't really checked. But if something's starting to click, that, again, he like we're talking about, he's 18. But the thing was, last year he held his own. Same with this year. He's holding his own. Maybe not putting up, you know, star level numbers, but he's holding his own. It's not like he's hitting under 100. Like, that's something else. But like, yeah, no. So it is kind of weird for people to be already kind of like, oh, this guy might not be as good as we're talking about, because he's struggling as an 18-year-old in low A or high A, sorry. But yeah, that's just one thing that I wanted to talk about on this podcast was Ethan Salas.
And I got one more thing to add too. He's a catching prospect, man. And while, you know, if you can find an offensive minded catching prospect that Ethan Salas projects to be, you got to remember, they have to deal with so much. They got to know how to manage the staff. You know, they got to worry about their knees, everything. And if he doesn't end up hitting how people think, I think his defense is still going to carry him. I think the way that he goes about the clubhouse is still going to carry him. You know, all he has to do is really hit 220, 230. And if he can catch and if he can be a leader, he'll be a regular at the worst.
Yeah, I love that. Love that a lot. Anyway, Austin, now let's get on to your eyes, everybody's favorite stat of the day. Austin, let's hear it.
Stat of the day. There, you heard it.
You're supposed to be, you know, woo, yeah, stat of the day. Let's go. Let's get it done.
Yeah, you know, let's get it done.
What a stick in the mud. Folks, this is his personality. Instead of, you know, getting hyped, he decides to be like, oh, stick of the day, like Squidward from SpongeBob. Okay.
You say stick of the day? Learn to speak English, dude. I'm not even full white and I speak better English than you.
No, you don't. Stop it. But anyway, this one is interesting because I did some digging yesterday and I finally found the minor league leaderboards on Baseball Savant, which people have probably found them earlier, but I couldn't find them for the longest time. So I found they're down to 17 because I couldn't. I decided to take 3 prospects out, but I found 17 players' exit velocities on home runs this year. And what we're going to do is we're going to take their isolated power, or ISO, and rank that as well. And then, Austin, you and I can talk about some of the names on this list. Are you ready?
Yeah, man, for sure. Let's do it. All right. Is that hype better for you than compared to before?
I mean, I guess. I guess.
Should I scream, let's go, at the top of my lungs and, you know, just put my hands in there and get the wave started?
Put your hands in the air like you just don't care.
Hey, man, you got to worry about that copyright strike.
Sorry, folks, my terrible singing better not get us a copyright strike. But anyway, So the first one on our list is Joensuke Noel, who is with the Guardians, and he had a home run this year at 115.4 miles per hour off the bat. Second is Griffin Conine of the Miami Marlins, and that is 114.9. Davison De Los Santos, who is a really interesting one because he was in the Rule 5 with the Guardians, but ended up being returned to the Diamondbacks at 114.2. Colson Montgomery of the White Sox hit one today at 113.8. Aurelvis Martinez of the Blue Jays hit one this year at 113.8 as well. Ariel Almonte, who is a guy that I'm really high on with the Reds, hit one at 113.7. Rhys Hines, also of the Reds, hit one at 113. Jose Tania of the Cleveland Guardians hit one at 112.1. Kobe Mayo, of course, everybody's favorite prospect of the Baltimore Orioles at 111.3. Owen Cassie of the Chicago Cubs had one 111 miles per hour off the bat. Damiano Palm. I can never say this guy's name.
You got to say it. Hey, you got to say it like an Italian. It's Damiano Palmigiani.
Oh, my God.
My brother
Damiano
was
Palmigiani.
My brother was an Italian for, so, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. But anyway, Damiano Palmigiani of the Toronto Blue Jays hit one 110.7 off the bat. James Wood, another one of everybody's favorite prospects of the Nationals, hit one 110.4 miles an hour. Joey Loperfido of the Astros hit one 110.3 this year. Jesus Baez of the Mets hit one 109.8. Adrian Del Castillo of the Diamondbacks hit one 108.5. Jace Young of Detroit hit one 108.2. And Thomas Sagesi of the Cardinals hit one 106.5. Now, before we talk about the isolated rankings, anyone that you want to highlight there really fast? I know that was a lot, but...
Not in particular. I think all of those guys definitely make sense being on that list. You know, all these guys have pretty big power potential. Like even Rhys Hines, he doesn't have an approach and he basically just mashes. The fact that he's up there, I don't think that's shocking. Although I do think that Hines is a very iffy prospect, but you know, I don't think anyone in particular really stands out on that list. I think all of them are pretty fitting to be on this list.
I mean, I don't mean to be the low guy here on, but Thomas Ajayi is, when I saw the 106.5, that kind of shocked me a little bit because I know he's more of a contact oriented bat than a power bat.
You know, when I saw Ajayi with the Frisco Rough Riders last year, I actually thought he was a power over hit guy. That being said, I still think that his hit is fine. I had it at a 50 and his power at a 55. I know I'm different than a lot of people, but I think he was trying to tap into more power last year, I think is what I was seeing. So him being on this list is fine too. But yeah, you know, I think that his bat is going to play out either way.
Okay. But there is one name on this list that we just completely skipped over, but it's Jose Tania at 112.1. Holy crap. Where did that come from?
Yeah, you know, that one is kind of shocking. I do remember when he was first signed and when he first debuted, a lot of people were pretty hyped on him, and then he kind of has died down a little bit in hype. So seeing him on this list is definitely pretty shocking.
But anyway, what we're going to do now is with those names, I took their isolated power rankings and we're going to basically rank those as well from best to worst. And for those of you that don't know what isolated power means or what it is, having a higher isolated power, it just basically takes into account your raw power. So basically, it's just how prone you are to extra base hits. And the higher you are, the more you're displaying, you know, more of a slugger kind of. And it isn't park adjusted. So if somebody plays in a hitter's ballpark, their number should be higher than somebody that plays in a pitcher's ballpark. But right now, the league average was around 140-ish. So here are the best of that list. So Kobe Mayo was at 347. Davison De Los Santos was at 314. Adrian Del Castillo is at 291. And these are for the 2024 season, by the way. Joensky Noel is at 282. Joey Loperfido is at 280. Griffin Conine at 260. James Wood at 259. Rovis Martinez at 251. Ariel Almonte at 237. Jace Young at 222. Reese Hines at 189. Jose Tania at 188. Jesus Baez also at 188. Owen Cassie at 185. Damiano Palmigiani at 180. Colson Montgomery at 158. And Thomas Ajayi at 154.
Hey, so there that you go. List. There you go with pronouncing Palmigiani's name correctly. But yeah, you got to say it more correct. Like you got to say it more like an Italian.
Okay, look, I'm not Mario. I'm sorry, but. But yeah, no, that list is a lot more interesting now. Do you think so?
Yeah, you know, for sure. And I'm honestly kind of shocked that James Wood isn't higher. You know, I think he's got the best power potential, at least game power, compared to all these guys. So I'm a little bit shocked he's not at the top of that list.
You could say the same for Jace Young, too. Because I know, yeah, he's more power than hits.
That's definitely fair, because like you just said, he has power over hit. And I don't know. I think Wood, I was expecting to definitely be at the top, if not number one, definitely like top three. But, you know, that being said, their parks aren't factored in and this is essentially just raw.
Yeah, but both these lists, that was more interesting than what we've ever done before, kind of, because it just shows who has the most raw power. And that's honestly kind of crazy. Like De Los Santos having a 114.2 mile per hour home run this year, and then also having a 314 isolated power. It just shows how much raw power is just in that bat that we're finally starting to see this year. But Guardians fans, that was a bad move by the front office. They probably should have kept him or tried to trade for him because, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say he's like going to be a superstar because he does have a lot of swing and miss. But my goodness, man, that raw power in his bat is something to dream on if you're a Guardians fan, or sorry, D-backs fan. Sorry,
you know that we, fan. And you know that we saw him at the AFL too, and he hits the ball hard every time. And yeah, he is going to come with some swing and miss, but if he can at least be like a 40 hitter, that's going to be insane with how much he's going to impact the ball, like how much he can barrel the ball. And I think that he might be leading the Guardians in home runs potentially. I think he might be leading the Diamondbacks in home runs potentially.
I was gonna say no. The guy that's gonna be leading the Guardians in home runs is somebody we haven't even talked about, and that's Joensky Noel. Dude just straight mashes the ball. He's kind of like a Franmil Reyes, if I could comp him to somebody.
Hey, that was a good transition on my mistake. Good job.
Thank you. I know, but yeah, Joensky Noel is all power, very little hit. But this year he has kind of put the ball in play more. But my goodness, the power in that bat. Oh.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen Noel in game, honestly, but seeing a lot of clips on Twitter/X, you know, a lot of people are getting hyped on the power now, and seeing his home runs posted there, it's not like he's got some effort in his swing, but when he connects, the ball just flies off the bat. So yeah, I think that he and Jose Ramirez are going to lead the team in home runs.
Only problem is he has really very little defensive value, but
that is true. But you know, they could stick him at first and he'll kind of just be a guy that's there and all the production.
Or just flat out DH with him.
That is true. That is also another option.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to move on from the stat of the day. I thought that was probably, like I said, one of the most interesting ones we've done. And now time to get roasted. We've had some incredible takes with this one in the past. We've had a Jackson Holliday take, an Anthony Volpe take, a Jason Dominguez take. We've had a lot. And I'm talking about overrated, underrated, folks. And we're going to start off immediately with our overrateds. I will go first because Austin's is a little bit of a doozy. Mine, I guess a lot of people could probably understand, but my overrated is with the Pirates. And I'm just going to go with Anthony Solomito. His control this year looks a lot worse than it did. I just don't know how his stuff transitions at the next level, because right now he is currently, I get it, I get he's 21 in double A, but he's really not performing, I could say. But he is younger than the competition, so I get it. But it's the main factor is his control has gotten marginally worse this year compared to last year. He's walking more guys, working behind in the count, and the stuff is good, don't get me wrong. But I just don't know if he's the pitcher that the Pirates are hoping that he is. And if he is, then I'll shut up and stop talking bad about him. But yeah, that control in general is just the reason why I'm kind of like, he's a little overrated, but it could always get better. Austin, let's go with your pick for overrated.
Yeah, so I know this is going to piss a lot of people off because I know what he did in the World Baseball Classic. I know how he looked in spring training coming, you know, his first trip to spring training, I believe it was this year. But my pick is going to be Harry Ford, which honestly kind of sucks because I do like Harry Ford. I think he's going to be a good regular in every lineup. I think that whether he's a catcher or he shifts, I think that his athleticism and his power potential are there, that he's still going to be a regular. But between being a first-round pick and being an athletic catcher, I think that he's overrated. Because you know that I'm working on a scouting report of him right now. You know, I've been watching a lot of AA. Like I said, I do think that he's going to be a big league regular. But I do have really big concerns about his hit tool. Now, he has been better as of late. Like, I've seen him do better in certain situations. Like starting the season, he really has struggled to make good contact with the ball when he's behind in the count, and in close games he tends to struggle as well. Like he doesn't really impact the ball, or you know, he might make contact but it's gonna be for an out, and he does show some swing and miss as well. Now I for those reasons, and just he's also a catcher, so I'm trying to think realistically here. I know a lot of people like his hit tool. I put a 40 on his hit tool, which I think is maybe a little too harsh, but I think it's a very fair grade, because if he does stick behind the plate, you know, all he's got to do is pop 20 home runs. And if he can manage the pitching staff, and I do think he has an above average arm behind the plate, but I just think that people are very, very hyped on his bat. And while I think it's going to be fine, I think that there's enough to worry about that instead of him being a star or a perennial all-star, like I feel like people are expecting, I do think he's going to be a big league regular instead. Hence, he's my overrated. That being said, I still think that he's, you know, nothing wrong with a 240 to 245 catcher that hits 20 home runs. And yeah, you know, there's still a lot to like, but I think that there's enough to be concerned about for him to be my overrated. Anything we know?
Folks, get your pitchforks ready, because I'm in the Harry Ford fan club. But
oh, and
he's
one more
watched
thing.
A lot more of Harry Ford than I have, so I don't really know how he's been this year. So yeah, so
one
I,
more
I have
thing.
No word to say.
One more thing about Harry Ford too is he's not really a great blocker. He's an average blocker. He can get eaten up on tougher pitches in the dirt. So another concern that I have for him being overrated is if it came down to choosing Cal Raleigh or Harry Ford behind the plate for the Mariners, I think a lot of people would end up choosing Cal Raleigh. So yeah. Okay. Now I'm done.
Okay. For those people that are saying that, no, no.
All right. Well, if you want to DM me, if you want to
Cal Raleigh is a D, it will be the DH once Harry Ford is done. Like that's because Harry Ford is better defensively. Even though you just went on a tirade about him being overrated, he's still better than Cal Raleigh.
I mean, fair, but at the same time, it's like I feel like his athleticism too might end up getting him shifted to second base, and his power might end up playing up if he ends up moving there, or he might get sent to the outfield. But just, I think if it came down to there being someone else versus Harry Ford behind the plate, I think Harry Ford might do enough that he stays behind the plate. But I think that it would be better to shift him because he doesn't really, I mean, he's got a good arm, but I think that a lot of the faster runners are going to test it a lot. And I've seen him not have the best catch and releases. And I just have not a lot of concern, but I have enough concern where it's like, if I had the option to move him elsewhere, I would probably move him elsewhere.
Interesting. But yep. Now the best part, the underrated prospects, the kinds that, you know, those fantasy guys like that, those big time prospectors love to hear about. Austin, I'll let you take this one first, because mine, I guarantee you not a lot of people know who he is, but I think I'm pretty high on him. So go ahead and you go first.
Yeah, so my pick for underrated is going to be a really interesting one. My guy is going to be Sal Stewart. I think that there's a lot of raw power in his bat, and I do think that it will translate for the most part. Now, I don't think he's going to be a 40 home run bat by any means, but I am higher on his power potential than most, I feel. I think that he could potentially be a 25 plus home run bat while hitting like 260-ish. And what I really love about his bat is he controls his swing pretty well, and he can do a good job of impacting the ball. And I think he's going to be a solid OBP guy. I don't think he's going to be like a leaderboard OBP guy, but I think he's going to walk plenty, and I don't think he's going to strike out a whole lot, which is, you know, strikeouts are so much more rampant in today's game that he still might strike out like 130 times a season, which is not terrible considering today's game. So if he can hit like 260 with 25 plus home runs and potentially 30 plus doubles, in my opinion, he's also got a really good arm at third. I don't think he's anything special defensively, but I feel like not enough people talk about how good Sal Stewart could be. Now, I get he was a prep guy, and you know, he's still got a bit of ways to go. He's only in high A, so I think that once he reaches double A, if he starts the match, that's when people are going to start taking notice. But I've just, every time I've seen Sal Stewart, I've loved his bat.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Austin, I'm a big fan of Sal Stewart. I got to see him in rookie league, and you weren't kidding when you said the ball just flies off his bat. The sound off of his bat is something different. But as my transition here, another guy that is young, very raw, but very talented, in my opinion, is Eduardo Guerrero of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And Austin, you may ask, who the hell is that? Well, I will answer right now.
That literally was my question.
Huh?
That literally was my question.
Yeah, so he is a switch hitting infielder in the Dodgers organization. He's out here in rookie ball. Stats aren't bad. They're not good, but they're not that bad. But the thing is, the first time I ever saw him, he had an exit velocity north of 100 on a double. And every time I've seen him, he's gotten a base hit or he's gotten into a deep count. He's done a lot of good stuff. And his right-handed swing isn't as natural as his left, but his right-handed swing, I still saw a barrel on a base hit up the middle. And Austin, when you come out here, you're probably going to see him. So you'll see a lot of hopefully what I'm seeing. I'm going to see him one more time before I officially get grades on him, but he's been a really interesting piece for me for the ACL Dodgers, who absolutely stacked hitting wise. But yeah, Eduardo Guerrero is a dude that I've been hyped on since I got out here. But yeah. So you'll see what I'm talking about when you get out here for Arizona Complex League. Yeah.
I'm definitely going to have to remember that name. Well,
it's on my list, so you should remember it.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. See, we finally agreed on something. Good job. You get your treat today. Good job.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. You get your Sonic corn dog or whatever the hell you get at Sonic.
Hey, watch your mouth. There are probably kids that listen to this.
Okay. All right.
On that note, we're going to end this podcast here because Austin is making me lose brain cells and I need them to actually live today. But
anyway, you don't have any left, actually. So
exactly my point, folks. Anyway, this has been fun. Austin, it was really nice to have you back. Not, but, you know, it was kind of a classic to have just you and I talking.
Yeah, you know, we'll have more guests again in the future, but this was the inaugural Spotify episode, so we figured that it would be best for just us two to be here.
Yeah, and as always, Austin, do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah, if you want to check out our previous Prospects Overload episodes, you can go to our YouTube channel, Prospects Worldwide. And like I mentioned earlier, I've got a Cole Young report in the works. I've also got a Harry Ford report in the works, and I'm going to piss some people off with that. But if you're interested to see what I say, definitely go check them out.
Awesome. Awesome. I can't wait to read those and get mad. But anyway, I have a Braylon Moreau report in the works, who's a Rangers prospect. And I think I'll do someone else as well. I'm probably Filippo Dottori for you Brewers fans. But yeah, and just go follow us on Instagram or the same Prospects Worldwide. We're putting up a ton of footage on there. Always follow us on Twitter, Prospects World W. Trying to get to that 5K goal by the end of the year, which will be really fantastic for us. But anyway, Austin, this has been a joy, and peace, everybody.
Peace, guys.